Hey guys, welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and Healing Arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways, and for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show.
So, Pedro Alcantara is a musician, writer, teacher, and healer. He is the founder of Integrated Practice, a deep practical exploration of the relationship between creativity and health. He grew up in Brazil, studied the cello in New York, spent 7 years in London, and now he resides in Paris. Pedro has quite an impressive biography. You may like to visit his website to learn more about him. He is the author of several books, including 2 children books. You will find all the relevant links in the chat box below. In this presentation, Pedro will introduce practical ways to redefine healing and to practice the creativity for your benefit and for the benefit of other people in your life. Please, Pedro, it's all yours. Enjoy, everyone.
Thanks, Nora. Thanks, Karine, for your support. Thanks, John and Herti and all the others who have come for my little party. I'm just very happy to be here. And thanks to the organizer of this wonderful conference, 1,000 people. We can hardly understand it, how 1,000 talks and workshops happen over these 2 weeks. It's just very, very exciting. Some of the people here present, I know them relatively well, or perhaps very well. And I'm going to use one of these people to introduce a first idea. And I'm going to use my friend John Murrell, who is there sitting in front of us.
Hi, Pedro. And,
hi, John. It's just very nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And the thing is, if you look at my face, and then if you look at John Murrell, you will see that we are quite different. It would be quite strange for anyone to confuse John and me and say, you guys are so alike that there's just no way that we can tell you apart. But in fact, just a quick glance lets you know who is John and who is Pedro, because we are completely different. We just look different, we dress different, we move different, we talk different, we think different. We are completely different, John and I. But what's very interesting is that John and I, we are exactly alike. We both need oxygen. Without that, 7 minutes max, we'll have a brain problem, and then we'll die. We both need to eat and to sleep. We both need to express ourselves creatively and otherwise. We both need to deal with our aspirations, our hopes and fears, our family history. We need to make a living and think about how do we really feel about work and money. And that means the more we think about it, the more John and I become exactly alike. This is called a paradox. Two things that seem to be in complete contradiction, in fact, complete each other. John and I are completely different. John and I are completely alike. And I believe both those things are true. And the nature of paradox helps us understand life, live more creatively, relax about things that we don't understand, which is very paradoxical. It's more than one thing. Life is a great mystery. Life is very simple, but you know it's a great mystery. It's very simple. It's a great mystery. Well, both are true. And once you embrace the paradox, I think you relax, you open up, you start feeling good. And in terms of healing our subject, to embrace the paradox, I believe is very, very useful. And I'm just using this example that John Murrell and I are completely different and exactly alike. And that means that all people here present and everybody else in the world, we are all completely different one from the other, and we are completely alike. The idea of paradox is at the heart of healing because we ultimately don't always know how healing works, but it works. So we know and we don't know, we don't know and we know. And it's just very, very interesting to have these two aspects at the same time. I would like to tell you a story. I grew up in Brazil, in São Paulo, a big city of 24 million people. I was there in the 1960s and 70s, when the city was much smaller, it was only about 15 million people. I grew up in a normal middle-class family. We grew up downtown, went to public schools, five children in the house. And at some point I started learning music. I played the cello. At some point I left Brazil to go study in the United States. And the culture in Brazil, one of the aspects of the culture in Brazil is that when you greet somebody at a party, a dinner party, and you're meeting somebody for the first time, you do the cheek-to-cheek kiss. And all women do it to all women. All men do to all women. And some men do it to some men. But essentially, the habit for the Brazilian is to greet with a cheek-to-cheek contact. You call it a kiss. It doesn't really involve the lips, although you make a sound, maybe, or something like this. So you're meeting somebody for the first time, and vous faites la bise, we say it in France. Jeanne just put that in the chat. In the United States, you don't do that. You're not supposed to do that. That is taboo. That is verboten. That is molestation. That is cooties. That is viruses, and that is just dirty and ugly. Don't do it. And you can have some very dear old friends in the States whom you never touch. Or you touch a little bit, you hug a little bit, but this idea of cheek to cheek, well, in the States, it's just a different culture. That means that I grew up with a culture that defined the relationship between people in a certain way and invited touch and contact. And if you grow up in the States, the definition of the contact with people is very different. And there's a certain emphasis on distance. You give people their distance, you give them their space. Well, I had spent a summer in the States when I was about, a summer in Brazil when I was 20 years old. And I went back to the States to resume my studies. And I arrived there, and that very day when I arrived back in the States after a summer in Brazil, I attended a concert. And I was jet-lagged, I was tired, and in the lobby of the theater, I see a young woman who I know not very well, just an acquaintance. But somehow I was still in the Brazilian time zone. So I approached her, and I did the cheek-to-cheek kind of kiss with her. She recoiled in horror because I had molested her. I had done something quite wrong. I had done something ugly and dirty. And her face and her recoiling have stayed with me because I learned something. And in that moment, I didn't understand that I had learned it, but I think I learned something about concepts and definitions. We define things for ourselves, and those definitions lead to our behaviors. If you define greeting as being a form of contact, your behavior is going to follow that definition. If you define friendship as space and distance, your behavior is going to follow that definition. And that means that if you would like to change some behavior of yours, something that hurts, something problematic, something somewhat handicapping to yourself, if you'd like to change the behavior, you have to change the definition, because it's the definition that animates the behavior. We will take the idea of health, for instance, and we're going to imagine some doctor of a certain school, we don't know if he exists or she exists, but we're going to imagine that you go see that doctor and he takes your pulse, he listens to your heart and to your lungs, he weighs you and says, Pedro, you are in very good health, with just a little extra weight, but your pulse is good, the heart's ticking, and the lungs are working. And for a person like this, the definition of health is extremely narrow. It's just four or five numbers of a physical nature. That's a narrow definition, and that doctor is going to offer therapies and bits of information according to that narrow definition. Let's imagine somebody else, us here present, and we decide that we're going to define health much more broadly. And we're going to say that health is everything in your life as it interacts. The decisions that you make, your postures, your movements, the company you keep, the things that you eat, the thoughts that you have, the things that you say, your career decisions, your money decisions, where you live, how you deal with family. Well, all of this makes for your health. And good health means your entire existence unfolding in real time. This is a very broad definition of health. And it's going to lead to behaviors that are very different if the definition is very narrow. Can be very useful for you guys to think about the definitions in your life, about what's good manners, what's a good career, what is good health, what is creativity. For some people, it is just what professionals in the arts do, because they're trained artists, so they're very creative. That's a narrow definition of creativity. Or you can define it very broadly, and you can say everything that you do, think and say, all of your movements, they come from a creative source inside of you. Every movement, I'm doing something like this to talk to you right now, and this is a creative moment, a creative gesture. I'm not saying that it's a wonderful gesture, I'm just saying it comes from creativity. Here I'm defining creativity very, very wide. I'll say everything is part of your creativity, and that means that everybody is creative, and that means that you, right here, right now, you are expert creative people. Once you define it like this, you realize that everything you do is creative, and you can ride that horse, so to speak, and ride the horse of creativity. So now we have two things to work with, the paradox and the broad definition, in particular, of creativity. If we define things very broadly, we could say that hurts are, everything that hurts is a hurt. That if I do something like this to myself, that hurt. I slapped my face and that hurt. I did it a second time, that hurt even more. So I'm defining hurt as something that hurts. That's a little bit circular. If I get a splinter in my finger, wow, that hurts. If my wife decides to leave me, that's going to hurt. If there's an explosion down the block, well, that's going to hurt. The explosion is very different from a splinter on my finger, but they're both from the same source, the source called hurt. And I believe it can be very useful for all of us to regroup all the hurts in this one category, because then we can just address the category instead of addressing each specific hurt in turn. We do a big thing towards healing from the hurt. Now, the first thing that I want to do in practice here today, this is an apple, it's a pink lady. Very nice, tasty apple, like it very, very much. And I need to give you a trigger warning, because in a moment, I am going to take a bite out of the apple. It's a normal apple, I'm going to take a normal bite, but I'll take a kind of a extroverted bite, you know, a big bite like this. It's going to make a sound, and a crunchy, crunchy sound. You know how apples sound when you bite into them. So in a moment, probably in about 45 seconds, without further warning, I will take a bite out of this apple. And as I say, this is a trigger warning. So those of you who are very sensitive, you might want to think twice before you keep watching, because I'm giving you a warning, okay? What I'm going to do, I'm going to talk to this apple, and this apple is going to become a three-year-old boy, a loving and lovable, innocent boy who, lives in a good family and goes to kindergarten or something like this. And the boy likes to play. He's very curious. He's just tender. He's very sweet. He has those beautiful, pure eyes of the young boy. He's just a child, you could say. He's kind of an angel. I give you a warning. I told you that I was going to take a bite out of the apple. And the reason why I needed to give you a warning is that I think, I'm persuaded, that the imagination is the most powerful thing in the world. And if at some point you start thinking about this apple as a boy, the apple becomes a boy in our imagination. And if I take a big bite out of the boy, it is an incredibly violent, cruel, sadistic thing for me to do in front of 73 people from all over the world. My point is that the imagination is extremely powerful. I have to finish eating my apple. The bite was not imaginary. So just give me a second here to chew and to swallow. It's a done deal. So imagination is very, very powerful. The apple can become a boy. I took a bite out of the boy, and now I will apologize to the apple. I'll call the boy John. It's a good name for a boy and for an apple. So John, I'm very sorry that I took that bite, that big, strong bite, suddenly, without that much warning. I'm sorry I didn't tell you beforehand. I know that you were born to be eaten by me, so it was your destiny anyway. But I was a bit sudden, and I didn't really take into account your sensations, your feelings. It was a bit too much. I acknowledge that it was a bit too much. And I hope you have it in yourself to forgive me this act of violence. And because I acknowledged my error, and because the boy is so pure and talented, the boy agreed to forgive me. And I'm just very happy about it. I'm putting that apple aside, because now that we have determined scientifically that the imagination is the most powerful force in the world, we can now use our imaginations to become expert healers of all hurts in the world. I know I'm exaggerating, I'm making a very broad case, I know it's I cannot prove what I'm saying, but the imagination is very powerful, and if I say these words, I start believing them, and I start feeling good, and I start opening up, and I start believing that, in fact, I have the power within, by my imagination, to solve problems, to create things, and to heal my hurts. And the way we're going to start is very simple. If we were face-to-face, we would go around the room greeting everybody in a very effusive manner. Hello, how are you doing? John Murrell, how good to see you here. Horty, you're here. How great to see you here. And those of us who come from cultures where you do the physical thing, we would hug people or do the cheek-to-cheek or tap them in the back or in the shoulder. We would just greet everybody. But we are online, and we don't even have the breakout rooms. So the way we're going to do it, some of you are sitting with friends, so we can do it with the friends that you're sitting with. And what you're going to do is very simple. You're just going to say, hello. Yeah. And I'm going to say hello to things in my room. And I'm suggesting that you can do the same thing in your house. I'm saying, hello, computer. Hello, piano. Hello, cello. Hello, door. Hello, window. Hello, pencil. Hello, screen. And if you just say hello, if you just say hello, it's a greeting and it's a reaching out and it creates a first connection. And if you really say with your heart, hello, that greeting is a form of unconditional love. There are reasons why I have a pencil here. I will be talking about the pencil, but I have unconditional love towards this pencil here. So to it I say, hello, hello. I would like you to say hello to each of your fingers. That means 10 hellos, you know. You do it, I'll do it. I can't really hear you, but I can see you. So I am seeing you, I'm monitoring this thing here. Say hello to your fingers. Hello, hello, hello. Hello, 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 hello. A simple greeting becomes communication, reaching out, using your voice, using your breath, putting out vibrations, putting out energy. And symbolically, this word hello means communication and connection. And it's good for you to have symbols at your disposal, for instance, a symbol of communication and connection. Hi, hello. And the other thing about the word hello, it sounds like a bunch of other words, like hallelujah, hello, hallelujah. Yeah, it's strange that they should sound so similar. Or allowed, this is allowed. Pedro, you are allowed to talk. Hello, allowed, hallelujah. And you start thinking about it, you will conclude, I think, sooner or later, that all words are connected. This is a big, fat dictionary, read like this. More than 1,000 pages, I think. I just open it here, and all these words. And what's really, really, really amazing is that every word has some connection with some other word. And that means that if you have 100,000 words in a language, you have millions of connections between different words. Every word is connected to every other word, directly or indirectly. And this is the phenomenon of interconnectivity. Everything is connected. And that means that every time you say any one word, you can be alert to the fact that the word that you're using is connected to 100,000 other words that can have together billions and trillions of connections. Most incredible thing. So from now on, my dear friends, every hello is every word because they are contained together in this one vocal gesture. If I say hello, I have consonants and vowels. In hello, I have the first consonant with the H sound, ha, 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 ha. And I have the double L, hello, hello. And I have two vowels, hello, right? If you say hello a few times, you are saying consonants and vowels. You are singing, you are talking, you are making a point, you are putting things out. And what I would like you to do at home, by yourselves or with the friends that are sitting right next to you, you're going to practice hello as a vocal exercise with consonants and vowels and pleasure and turns of the tongue. And then the next thing you know, you get very excited and you start improvising and you go from saying hello to hello, 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 la, lo, li, le, ho, la, lo, le, lo, lo, li, la, lo, la, lo, hello, hello. I believe it's a natural, spontaneous thing for you to do, to go from one word. You start feeling your tongue going up and down. Your tongue, hello, hello, hello. And you're going to go up and down with it. And the next thing you know, you're a child playing in the playground. And if you do that, you feel good. And you feel good, you hurt less. So you take any one word, in our case is hello, and you take it as a starting point for vocal or linguistic improvisation. We know that you are very, very creative by birth. Your creativity is immense. So all you have to do is you have the starting point, hello. And I hope that as you watch this thing here, you're half paying attention to what I'm saying and half going, hello, 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 la 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 la. Because it makes you feel good. And if you feel good, you hurt less. So you use vocal sounds, vocal gestures to feel good. And you have those gestures at your disposal. Yeah, that's the idea. Every word connected to every other word, and every sound a potential improvisation of pleasure, love, joy, and healing. Every sound. Yeah. So I have something for you here. This is a photo, and it's my older brother. You may remember that I told you that when I grew up in Brazil, we were five children in the family, and their names were Mônica, Luiz, Pedro, Floriano, Marina. I'll do it again. Mônica, Luiz, Luiz Eduardo, Pedro de Alcântara, Floriano, Marina. So I'm the middle child. This guy here is Luiz Eduardo, my older brother. He has no idea that I'm showing his photo at this conference and talking about him. Because, I'm talking about the fact that this photo represents every human being on Earth and every human being who ever lived. Because if I think about my older brother, I think about all of my siblings, and I think about my parents, and I think about my grandparents and my uncles, and I think about my cousins, and I think about my neighbors, and I think about my neighbor's uncles, and I think about the mother-in-law of my neighbor's uncle, or something like this. And the next thing I know, everybody is connected. You are probably familiar with the concept of 6 degrees of separation. This was a famous play about 30 or 35 years ago, and this is the phenomenon is now studied. It is said that from you to any one person on Earth, there are only just at most 6 intermediate steps that you have to take. I'm going to give you an example. I am here, and I have a friend, an old friend from college called David, who met Bill Clinton here. And that means that I am only 2 degrees of separation from Bill Clinton. I have another dear friend, Barney, and he met George Bush. This is me, this is Barney, this is George Bush. I am only 2 degrees of separation from George Bush. You start thinking about this, and you're 2 or 3 degrees of separation from every human being on Earth. I believe Google and those people who have a lot of data at their disposal have made studies and established some averages. And for most people, on average, they're something like 2.7 degrees of separation from everybody else. So 6 is an exaggeration. We're closer than we think. So this photo of Luis Eduardo, my older brother, is a year older than me, represents humanity and the interconnectedness of all human beings. And what you're going to do as an exercise, if you don't have a photo of a family member to symbolize for you that interconnectedness, you're going to use your imagination, very powerful, and you're going to take the palm of your hand, and on the palm of your hand, you're going to project from your imagination to the hand the image of a family member. I am going to project Luis onto my palm. And I just look at my palm, and I'm looking at Luis, and I'm thinking about him. He's in Brazil right now. I'm here. We're separated by thousands of miles. He doesn't know I'm talking about him in front of people, but here I am talking to Luis and looking at Luis and sending my love to Luis. And I think if you just project onto your hand, you can see in your hand anybody you want. I can see my cousins, I can see my late mother and my late father, I can see my wife, she's in Paris right now, but not in my home. Hi Alexis, how are you doing? I miss you. Come home soon. And your hand becomes the screen upon which you project the things from your imagination. The imagination is very powerful. Now you have a screen, you have your hand, You can do two hands. You can do the back of the hand. Well, you have this tool at your disposal. Your hand is now symbolic of 7 billion people alive today and another couple of billion who were alive two generations ago. Everybody's right there. And you have family relationships with most of them by 1, 2, or 3 degrees, right? Here you have it. Good. What I would like to show you, fork, a normal fork, just an eating fork from my kitchen, just a normal, inexpensive fork. On the one hand, this fork here is connected to every object in the world because the principle of interconnectedness applies to everything. But what is very, very interesting about the fork is it has a whole history. There were cultures 1,000 years ago beginning to use forks to eat, and some museums have old forks from Persia or things like this. But strictly speaking, the forks that we use today, they came through the Italians. In roughly 1400 or 1500, the use of forks was becoming more prevalent in Italy, partly because of the popularity of pasta. I know all of this because of Wikipedia. It must be true if it's on Wikipedia. So we have forks here today because of pasta in Italy. And that means that every time you use a fork, you're connected to hundreds of years of history, gastronomy, traditions, manufacturing, craft, and everything else. It means that this fork is the symbol of history, food, and everything else. What's very interesting about the fork is that it's also a symbol of other things. For instance, we can talk about a fork in the road. You're going down the road and you come to a fork. Maybe there are 3 or 4 possibilities. Do you turn left or right? Well, it's a very big deal when you come to a fork in the road and you have to make a decision as to where you're going. That road can be a physical road or a mental road in your imagination. You have to make a decision. And the fork symbolizes the possibility of choice and making a decision. And that means that symbolically, this fork represents from now on for all of us the possibility of choice, also the responsibility of choice. If you think about the trident, you know, Neptune or Poseidon, they had a trident, Neptune's trident, and it was just a very powerful thing. And Poseidon took his fork and his trident and he hit a rock and the ocean gushed out of the rock. And that means that this fork is symbolic of the power to get an ocean to gush out of a rock. So tonight or later tomorrow, this weekend, when you eat, you will be using a tool that has the power to make an ocean gush out of the rock. If you don't have a fork at your immediate disposal, all you have to do is to make a fork with the 3 fingers of your hand. I'm left-handed, so I tend to demonstrate things with my left hand. You make the fork with 3 fingers, a trident, and you eat some pasta, in homage to the Italians that made the use of fork very usual now. And then you become Poseidon, and you're in Greece, and you're going to throw that fork against the rock, and that rock will make an ocean to gush out. And if you want, it could be an ocean of unconditional love or something like this. So you have at your disposal Poseidon's trident right here, right now. The imagination is very powerful. We have demonstrated that scientifically. And that means that if you simply want to believe that you have power from your fingers to the world, you will have some sort of power. At the very least, the power to amuse yourself, have a good time, and feel better just because you have that powerful tool, right? Thank you. Now, I told you, didn't I? I told you that I was going to tell you about the pencil. As it happens, I think the Americans here present will recognize this as a Ticonderoga pencil, yellow pencil with a little bit of a green metal here, and just an eraser. I have sharpened it a little bit. And the thing about the pencil, think about every school kid excited when the new school year is going to start and you have a new notebook, new pencils, new pens, new friends as well. But the very idea of having a new notebook and a new pencil fills the kid with such an excitement that the kid cannot even sleep because he's going to school and he's going to start. It's going to be a new start. A fresh, empty notebook with a new pencil, newly sharpened. So this pencil here is the symbol of writing, of drawing, of acquiring knowledge, of sharing knowledge, of expressing yourself, of writing love notes to your colleagues, doing doodles, or doing mathematics, of doing numbers. It is a symbol of a great many things. And the idea for you is to become alert to the symbolic dimension of every object, everything in your house. This is symbolic of vision and insight. The pencil is, I would recommend that you have at your disposal in your house a box of pencils so that you never run out of the fresh pencil with a fresh start where you can do something for the first time. So your pencil is your best friend, and you want to have those pencils quickly and easily at your disposal. Now, this is a notebook. You can see I haven't written anything in these two pages here. I'm putting it down. I'm tilting my screen forwards so that you can see my notebook and you can see my pencil. And I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this and this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. And now I'm going to do this and this and this. And I have become Picasso and Matisse. I have become an architect. I have become an engineer. I have become a mathematician. I have become a writer and a poet. I have become every person who has ever expressed a thought or an image or a gesture in a pencil and paper. Now, I'm not saying that I did something fantastically brilliant as far as the drawing is concerned. All I'm saying is that I engaged in the creative process that is allowed or encouraged by this pencil. And in that moment, I'm expressing my creativity. And this is very meaningful to me, as it can be to all of you. You have your pencil, you have paper, and you just do something. And to begin with, the way I did it, I'll do it again, I'm doing it to no technical criterion. I'm just going back and forth completely at random. I'm really enjoying it. I'm doing it fast like this. Now I'm gonna do a kind of a pattern like this. And this is the art school called Extremely Low Standards. So right now I'm attending a school called Low Standards, and the diploma that you get from this school of low standards is unconditional love. Because of the low standards, you're not going to be criticized. The teacher's going to say, you know, Pedro, you kind of screwed up. This line here is too dark, Pedro. No, the teacher's going to say, Pedro, you expressed yourself freely. You did a gesture. You had a good time. It was wonderful watching you having a good time, Pedro. Here's your diploma. We love you unconditionally. And I'm suggesting that not only your pencil is going to be the symbol of creativity, to begin with, you embrace the idea of, I'm not really working to standards. My one thing is to express myself freely in pleasure and with a kind of a self-love. And once I relax into my self-love, I'm so relaxed that I can think creatively and constructively, and then I can decide to do something more orderly, where I do a grid or a table, where I'm going to write a project or do something like this. And to begin with, I had no goals and no standards. And now I have upped my standards without losing that unconditional love. So let there be a pencil in your life and at your disposal, symbolic of so many different things. Now, My friend and support, Nora, has just sent me a little message here. I'm going to try to read the message unless I don't know how to read, which is also possible. Okay, Pedro, can we have some practical exercises? And we're going to do two exercises. The first one, you know that you were able to project humanity on the palm of your hand, and you're able to throw the fork at a rock and get a gushing sea coming out. What you're going to do is you're going to use the finger, one finger. I'm going to use the index finger of my left hand, and this finger will be the pencil. And with that pencil, I'm going to write a poem in the School of Low Standards. It's just this poem that I'm writing. And then, you know, if you know how to read, you can read what I'm doing. And I think you can see that I'm saying unconditional love, right? So the exercise that you're going to do, you're going to take your imaginary pencil, which is your finger, and with it, you're going to do a drawing and a writing up in the air in front of you, and you're going to enjoy doing the gesture, and you're going to imagine that, in fact, you are drawing something, and then you can put the emphasis. You say, I really mean this, Pedro. And then you can say, love, L-O-V-E. But the main thing is for you to do this, and the imagination will take care of the rest. That's exercise number one. Thank you. And it's lovely to see you guys doing this. That's great. Thank you very much. You never have to worry about anything else all day long. You just go like this and you feel good. And because you feel good, then you can do work or take care of business or solve a problem or something like this. And now we're going to do another exercise. Nora, thanks for inviting me, reminding me of the exercises. I'm taking my pencil. If you don't have a pencil, you take a finger. And with this pencil, I'm going to hypnotize myself. I can hypnotize you as well, but it's just enough for my purposes that I hypnotize myself. And the pencil goes back and forth in front of my eyes. And you can use the pencil or you can use a finger that goes back and forth in front of your eyes. And then you talk to yourself with a kind voice, you know, bedside manner. And I'll do my version. It's like, Pedro, you're going to relax. You're going to start feeling very, 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 very good. And you're just relaxing ever more. Pedro, look at the pencil. Pedro, stay with the pencil. And you're just relaxed. And the more relaxed you become, the more creative you become, Pedro. And now, Pedro, you're going to remember when you were in the school of unconditional love. And you're going to say, I'm always in the school of unconditional love. And you can do that with a pencil, or you can do it with a finger. You can do it to other people, or you can do it to yourself. Call it self-hypnosis, call it self-love, call it playing a game, call it using your imagination, but you're having some stressful moments, you just put your finger, say, Pedro, you just look at the finger, Pedro, and stay with that finger. It's motion, it's the swing, it's the summer, it's the breeze, you are on vacation, and stay on vacation for a little while. Well, Pedro, I think you're ready to go back to work because now you are relaxed and you can think in a relaxed manner about those things at work that you need to solve. Yeah, thank you. So if you go to the movies, you watch the theater, you watch TV or Netflix or on YouTube, it doesn't matter. You are perhaps going to spend some time watching comedy or watching stand-up comedians or watching improvisational games. Well, never mind. Let's say you're watching a stand-up comedian, somebody whom you like very, very much. One of the old school ones could be a Richard Pryor, who was so very good. It could be a Robin Williams. Well, it doesn't matter. You're watching a comedian making a fool of himself. And that comedian making a fool of himself makes you feel very, very good for a lot of different things, including because he owns his own foolishness. That means he's not afraid of ridicule. It means he embraces the notion of ridicule, and he has a wonderful time doing this, and everybody or most people watching him laugh an awful lot, partly because it's therapeutic. To watch somebody make a fool of himself or herself who owns her foolishness is therapeutic because you go with it. You become that fool, as it were, and you let go of certain feelings, you let go of judgments, you let go of embarrassment and humiliation. You just laugh and laugh and you feel good. And some of those stand-up comedians are super popular and they're beloved decades after they pass away and things like this. So in terms of seeking this healing energy that comes from your imagination, one of the things that you can do is to own your own ridicule. And that's the exercise that we're going to do right now. I'm going to use a rubber band. If you don't have a rubber band, it doesn't matter. I will show you the version without the rubber band. So right now I'm talking to you with a relatively calm and serious tone of voice. And I'm just taking that rubber band and I'm putting it above and below my lips. And I'm just taking that rubber band and stretching it. And there's nothing, you know, I kind of look funny. Yeah, it's just my mouth and my lip became kind of big and strange just because I put that rubber band across my face and I pulled on it. And looking at myself, I see how funny I am. And the next thing I know, I become somewhat foolish. My voice changes. And it's like quite a show. You know, people are watching Pedro. Aren't you afraid of being seen as perfectly ridiculous? This is the whole point of the exercise. I own that ridicule. And that means that I can laugh at myself and feel good. If you don't have a rubber band, all you have to do is to use your hands, squish your lips, like this, like kids do it, or you can go like this. But the thing for you is to squish your face, make it look funny, and talk to the screen with your funny face and a funny voice. You know, like, oh, I love you so much. I want to have a baby with you. Yeah, and this is happening in public, and who the hell knows if this is good or not, but you know, yeah. You have now joined the troop of comedians who own the ridicule and who use it to evacuate feelings and to make other people feel good. Little kids do this. They play games. They make themselves funny. They make faces. So you're not going to say to the little kid, stop doing that. It's kind of ridiculous. You're going to laugh and you're going to say, you're so funny. Yeah. So you use your imagination. The rubber band's good. The hands are good. And you just find the place and the time to do it, right? We will soon run out of time, but I would like to introduce quickly, if I can, two new ideas. And I am trying to give this conference, you know, I'm not getting paid an awful lot of money. In fact, I'm not getting paid at all, but I'm a professional of creativity and healing right now. And this guy's trying to distract me and interrupt me. And it's kind of difficult to stay serious because ultimately I really want to play with him, you know. We get along and he's called Max. I've had him for years and years. And what I'm trying to say many things. And one's that we all have a child within. It doesn't, you know, I'm 62 years old. Oh, no, you're 60 years old. I'm 62 years old. But I feel that I am also 6 and 3 and 11 and 17 and 23. And I'm definitely 6. And as a 6-year-old, I have a stuffed toy. And that stuffed toy is my very best friend. And it's a loving, lovable friend. And we know that with our imaginations, we project things upon screens. And this little screen here is mine to project my unconditional love. Essentially, this is proof that I love myself. Yeah. And what I'm trying to tell you is that first, you can get a stuffed toy. I think that's a very good idea. You should have like 2, 3, or 5, maybe 17, maybe 65 stuffed toys in your home so that you can have these friends and play with them and let your child have a really, 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 really good time. That's the first idea. And the second idea is that, you know, this is Molly, another stuffed toy. And Mali was a gift from some colleagues in London. I was there some years ago giving a workshop that involved Detroit, and they gave me Mali. And then my backpack coming back home was too full. And what I did was to stuff Mali in my coat. And I walked around the streets of London, and I took the train with Mali sticking out from my coat. Now you can see that Mali is cozy, Mali is comfortable, Mali is safe. And you can see that I have a feeling that this presence protects my sternum, and that I have a friend, and that she's like my child or something like that. I really care for Mali, and I'm walking out down the streets of London with Mali visible. Well, it feels good, and it looks really, really good. And here's the question. Suppose that you could solve some problem or many problems by doing something like stuffing Mali in your coat and going for a walk. So suppose you could solve some of these problems by doing something that looks funny. Your choice is to have a problem or to have a solution. Mali is my solution. I feel good. Therefore, I am going to walk around with Mali sticking out from my chest because it's a solution to my problems. Ultimately, in healing, you need to make a choice, like that fork in the road, between the problem or the solution. If the solution looks funny, if it's a pencil, if it's a rubber band, if it's a duck sticking out of your chest, well, if it's a solution, I'm suggesting that you embrace it. I had a message from Nora saying, Pedro, you talk too much, and this thing's going to be over in like 3 seconds. Nora doesn't speak this way. She actually said, Pedro, you have just a few minutes left. And I believe that as far as this presentation is concerned, this is over. Nora, do we have time for one or two questions, or do we not have time for questions?
We have time for questions. So far, there is no question. But if somebody would like to raise their hand and I can unmute them, that would be another way to ask a question. Or you can also put your questions in the Q&A box below. John says, excellent, class.
I know John well. I paid him $10 for his
class again.
Thanks, John. That was value for money. Thank you very much. Yeah. Yeah, I paid him nothing. He's just a dear friend. And we've done a lot of work together. I'm just very happy that John was here with us. Yeah. The Q&A has like two little bits in there, Nora.
Oh, we have some.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So Maria asks, how can we be a kid and at the same time be an adult?
Okay, the first idea is that it is a paradox to be a kid and an adult. And if you go back to the beginning of our class, the paradox is two things that seemingly don't belong together, but they complete each other. So I believe the true adult has a kid within and lets the kid come out and play. So you can be an adult by having the kid within, and then you can just go about your business. You don't have to wear a duck on your chest. You can just wear the child in your brain and in your heart. That's how you can be an adult and a kid at the same time. Yeah.
Great. And Susan asks, do you use this work with what group? She wants to know, what group are you applying this work to?
All right. So we are a group. We had about 60 people here, or 70 people. And in a group, we did this work. In my travels, I do versions of this work with groups of people. Sometimes it's 3 people. Sometimes it's going to be 12. And on a couple of occasions, I had groups of 130, 150 people. You just say to the group, well, we're going to do something. We're going to play a game. We're going to make fools of ourselves. And half of the group's willing to do it. And the other half of the group is afraid of being seen as too serious. So they do the exercise too. And that means that the whole group becomes foolish. It's a wonderful thing.
And the other question from Sue is, how do we encourage people to overcome their fear of being ridiculous? And I combine this with a second question, how to be spiritual and ridiculous at the same time?
Well, first, the thing about, you know, ridicule is a very big subject. And the first and most important thing, I believe, is that if you are alert to the fact that somebody else is very, very worried about appearing ridiculous, you may leave that person alone to begin with. So the first thing about ridicule is not to hurt people by making fun of them, unless they are really asking to be made fun of. I have a dear student here in Paris, and our work, he comes twice a week, and most of the work that I do with him is to tease him, to tell jokes, to poke fun of him, and over time, he has become able to tease himself, tell jokes to himself, about himself, and he feels really good. He's become able to have fun with ridicule. It took time, but here we are, we did that. I believe there are other questions coming up, but ridicule being a really big subject, I would say start easy. Do it alone at home when nobody's watching, except for your own watchful adult. I think that'll be good. You do it alone. And then how do you be spiritual and ridiculous at the same time? I'm going to take a book out of my library. Give me a moment here. Okay, it's just a little book called Rire avec Dieu, to laugh with God. And it's a series of anecdotes from the Sufi tradition. And I'm only using this book to hypnotize you into believing that it's possible to be spiritual and ridiculous at the same time. And because there's a book about it, it must be possible. And if it's possible, you must be able to do it. I'm not able to give you further exercises because the class is kind of over, but I think it's enough if I hypnotize you and you say, okay, Pedro, I now believe that every religion is pretty much ridiculous, so it's great. I'll go to church and have a really good time. Yes. I didn't mean to offend the religious people here present. I'm just trying to make a point.
Thank you, Pedro. This was a wonderful presentation.
Thank you, Nora.
And we are coming to an end now. Please visit our coffee break rooms and also the Facebook group where you can continue your conversation. Our next presenter on this channel will be John Miller. He's going to be up in 2 hours using Qigong to escape cycle of suffering. Our sponsor for this channel was Rafael Kelly, and the conference will be available for 48 hours for free, as you already know. You can still purchase the entire package for 50% off till the end of the conference. Digest it in your own time. You can share with friends, family, and students. And if you can afford it, please get the entire library. This will also be a thank you to us who have put endless hours into making this one of a lifetime event possible. And now our last word goes to Pedro. What is your golden wisdom on staying embodied in one sentence or less?
Less fear and more love to the extent that you can.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Nora, and thanks for helping me with this conference. And thanks you guys for coming. It's been a pleasure to make a fool of myself in front of you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.